This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Boston Bruins, New York Islanders begin their series tonight at 8 p.m. inside the TD Garden, as the Garden will be close to full capacity for the first time in 15 months. The atmosphere for playoff hockey, even when you have 25%, is amazing. But having a packed house for the Bruins game against the Islanders will have emotions running through the roof in this second-round matchup between the Bruins and the Islanders. I am Chris Ryan. Thank you so much for joining us. So let's hear from David Pastrnak right now about the Bruins' first-round win against the Washington Capitals before we look ahead to the Islanders series. And the Capitals, obviously a really good team, a tough first-round matchup for the Bruins. Bruins win in five games, but the first three games all went to overtime, obviously decided by one goal. Game four is where the Bruins really opened things up with a strong performance at home against the Washington Capitals. I talked with David Pastrnak about the team's success in the first round.
Hey, Pasta. Very often players will talk about how the first round is sometimes the most difficult round to get through. And what are your thoughts about what you were able to do against the Capitals in this series? Obviously, the first three games so close, and then the last two games outscoring them 7-2. It seems like you guys kept getting better. And what do you think that means down the road?
Yeah, I think you said it right there. I think our main focus was to keep getting better every single game. And I think that's what we have done. Obviously, probably the second, what was it, game three, second OT, was obviously huge, you know, for us, not just to get a win, but overall in the locker room. Obviously, when you on the ice for four and a half periods and you get a win at the end, you know, it's definitely a huge boost for the team. So it was a heck of a series, really close and you know, 1-4-1, but definitely felt way closer than that.
One of the big reasons for the Bruins' success has been the ability of Bruce Cassidy to pair his top defensive unit, which is Charlie McAvoy as well as Matt Grizzlick, with the perfection line of Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasta. And the depth of the Bruins' D has allowed for that to take place. I talked with Butchie about that, and also Jake DeBrusque, and how the depth at forward was a big key in the Washington series and needs to be against the Islanders. Hey, Butchie, how are you?
Terrific. How are you?
Also terrific. Wanted to ask you about Grizz and McAvoy. You viewed them through the course of the season as kind of being your optimal pairing, but issues with, you know, depth and other pairings seem to have you kind of go away from that. How much did your confidence in Riley and Carlo allow for that to be put together, those guys to be put together, or did you want to do that no matter what to allow for that support for the forwards?
Well, obviously, you know, at the start of the year, we had a plan in place with, you know, Lozon and Zboril cracking the lineup, how we could complement them, support them the best. And eventually we would go from there, probably give it a certain amount of time and then see if other pairs work better. Injuries often dictate that. How are they? Performance dictates it. So with Grizz and Charlie, we've always known they play well together. They feed off each other well. They're good friends. They see the game the same way. They can really complement an offensive line and still obviously play good defense. But I think they're at their best when they have an attacking line and a line that can control pucks in the O zone, where they can get involved and make it a five-man, you know, offensive unit. So bringing it to the Riley Carlo, well, we weren't sure on that because when Riley got here, Carlo was hurt. So we didn't have a long look at that. But what we did see was, we know what Brandon brings, and we started to see what Mike brings. So we thought we had two good players that could complement each other. And sometimes you don't know. Sometimes it's oil and water. Sometimes, you know, it works out well. So they've worked at it together, and it's allowed us, you know, to go that route. And, you know, Riley played with Miller as well. So we knew we had that if we wanted to keep Grizz and Carlo together. Or McAvoy, we could have put, you know, Riley with Miller. And you know, Brandon would have had Lowe's on, but we felt that, you know, that pair hadn't had much of a look either. So, you know, puck mover Riley with Carlo, I think he's always played better, Brandon, when he's had that type of player with him. And then, you know, we also go back and say, well, his first year he played with Z and they were a shutdown pair. So, you know, and he had a pretty good year. So you don't really know until they get together. And then, you know, we looked at the opposition and went from there.
I also want to ask you about the effectiveness of the third and fourth lines. In particular, you know, Jake DeBrusk, I thought, had a standout series against the Capitals. Your thoughts on where things are at with that group and those two lines?
Yeah, Jake, I think he had one quiet night. Other than that, he's been effective. You know, obviously scored a goal for us, scored a couple goals for us in here. Nice play the other night. Gets in behind their D. He's been good on the forecheck, complementing that line. I think when you get into a game like the other night where there's a lot of power plays and penalty kills, he hasn't seen as much power play time. On that second group, we've shuffled people around, so he's got to find a way to stay in the game mentally. That's his challenge as a younger guy that's used to maybe playing a little bit more. But he's been involved in the PK, so happy with his game. And those lines are score. You know, that third line has scored some big. Charlie Cole is a big goal for us the other night. You know, it kind of put them really on their heels. You know, you get a power play goal early. You know, you're down two. They're probably thinking, okay, we'll get one of the next. You know, before the 10-minute mark, we're right there, and we go and score the next shift. So credit to those guys. You know, took on some physicality after that in a scrum, and I think they've done a good job for us. As for the fourth line, best game they've played was the other night. I thought they checked really well, followed their assignments on the forecheck. They were responsible through the neutral zone. They managed pucks. They got good looks. I mean, Crowley had a couple good looks. Wagner in tight and a rebound chance. So. Credit to them. We need everybody going, and if we can use those bottom two lines against anybody, especially when you're on the road, then it's going to make us that much tougher to play against.
Bruins have had a decade of sustained competitiveness, which is something that you look at the Boston Red Sox that they have been looking for. Over the last decade for the Red Sox, they've won two World Series championships. There have also been a number of last place finishes in there as well. The Bruins have found that model of sustained competitiveness. I talked with team president Cam Neely about that and also Patrice Bergeron.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
Good. How about yourself?
Great. Want to ask you about, you know, this last decade, as obviously everybody's been celebrating the 2011 championship, but really, you know, it's been a decade of sustained competitiveness, and a lot of sports franchises want to try to find that. In your view, what have been the keys for establishing that sustained competitiveness where this group has been in it pretty much each year?
Well, it's really, you know, we're blessed to have the leadership group that we've had for, you know, this past decade. I think it starts there. And then, you know, when he introduced new players to the organization, you know, they either have to buy in or we'll find others that will. You know, I think that our locker room is probably one of the best in the league as far as, you know, how the players really play for each other, and they really enjoy each other's company. I mean, it's a really tight group. And that starts with the leadership, you know, and it's also character. You got to have the right players with the right character that you know what it means to play here and understand what this this market is as far as being a hockey player in Boston. All those things combined, you know, you certainly hope that you can get all those ingredients and mix them together properly. And that's, you know, fortunately, we're a little bit blessed that we've had that in the past 10 years.
Is it rare to have an individual that is as universally respected across the board as Bergy, where, you know, Bruce was talking about the fact that he got a little heated and Bergy calmed him down. Bergy, you know, provides that influence, obviously, on Brad as well at times. Is that rare to have a player, you know, to be able to get a coach to calm down a little bit and also have that influence? And what do you think has been his impact, and can it be overstated over the last 10 years?
Well, he's, you know, there's been so much already said about Patrice and his character and his leadership abilities. And, you know, he pulls people in as opposed to, you know, pushing them away. He really wants to get to know everybody, not just, you know, as teammates, but also personally and their families. And, you know, I give him a ton of credit for how he does lead. And it's, you know, I don't know if there's many guys like him, not just in hockey, but maybe in sport, really, you know, especially a team sport like we're playing in. He just because of his nature and how he is and how he works and the work ethic that he has, it's, you know, it's hard for others not to follow that. It really is.
Also talked with Bruins general manager Don Sweeney. Hey, Don, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you, Chris?
Good. Two, if I can. First, when you made the deadline acquisitions that you did you envision these guys would play the significant roles that they did, or did you see it mostly as, you know, upside type of trades? How did you evaluate those guys at the time, and how have they met what you anticipated?
Well, I think we as a staff tried to identify some areas, and both meeting with our coaches and obviously significant input from all of our pro staff and analytic group, that we had areas that we wanted to try to address. You never know what the injuries are going to present as you go along in a very, very compressed schedule. We also felt we needed to address the depth overall and just tried to, you know, sometimes it's about who's available. It doesn't mean you're going to be able to complete a deal, but we certainly identified some players that we thought would help us and complement our group. And find some, you know, as I said, some areas of need. And obviously Taylor's gone in and played well with Krejci and Smitty, and Lazar's gone in and played really well in the fourth line and penalty killing. And obviously Riles has slid in and played with Brandon and given us puck play that we needed. Again, and the depth due to injuries, you know, we played 8 defensemen in this round as well. We used 13 overall in the course of the season, so it was paramount to try and identify the needs of the club the best we could, and our pro staff, analytic group, everybody chipped in to hopefully be able to find the players that would help fill those holes. They've all acclimated very well into our locker room, testament to both those players themselves individually, but as well as our locker room and the leadership of our group to welcome them in and make them feel comfortable.
I want to ask you about Bruce as well, where he just seems like he is the perfect fit for, you know, this group. And what about his skill set, in your view, creates an environment where he is able to have the type of success that he has had?
Well, I mean, Bruce is a talented, you know, hockey mind first and foremost. You know, respects the game on both sides, offensively and defensively. Has tenets that he, you know, holds himself to and his staff to, and it permeates through our group. You know, trying to play the right way, trying to start on time, and holding the group accountable, and trying to, you know, to continue to communicate at all levels as to what he expects as a coach. And again, part of that is to have the wherewithal to make adjustments and to see the game in a certain light and be able to communicate it either through your staff. And I think he does a nice job allowing the assistants to attack those pockets of the game, delegate some authority to them, and have their pulse on all areas of the game. You know, we got young players we've tried to integrate, and they go through some challenges, and the assistants have to sort of help steer that ship a little bit. But Bruce is in full command of that stuff.
Now we switch gears to the Red Sox, who have a 3-game series against the Miami Marlins at Fenway Park this weekend. Today and tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday, full capacity allowed at Fenway Park. Those who are vaccinated do not have to wear masks, and those who are not, it is suggested they wear masks. So the mask mandate at Fenway Park being lifted for the Red Sox games moving forward. As for the team themselves, one of the key aspects of this team has been the veterans that were acquired in the offseason. Not a lot of big names, but a lot of significant players who've played key roles for the team so far this year. Nobody has been off the board phenomenal, but they've all been impactful. I talked with Red Sox manager Alex Cora about that.
Alex, how would you define what the impact has been of the veteran players, that your position players you acquired in Marwin and Hunter, Kike? Have they been what you expected both on and on and off the field?
Yeah, they've been great. You know, on a daily basis on the field, you know, what they bring is defensively, they've been great. All of them. And I think that's something very important, especially now that, when the ball is in the air and stays in the ballpark, you got to catch it. And it seems like the ball is staying in the ballpark. And, you know, perfect example yesterday, Marwin comes in, you know, to hit for Bobby. Great idea against the shift. It doesn't work out. but then he goes to play defense and he dives and makes that play against Adrianza to keep us in the ball game. And you can move it around, him and Enrique, and even Hunter. You know, we play him in center field, and you know they're going to give you a solid effort defensively. Offensively, Hunter is doing a lot better. Kike has been doing a good job you know, right before the IL stint and now when he came back. And Marwin, you know, he's struggling. He'll tell you he's struggling. And we'll have to get him right. We have to keep working with him. But, you know, on and off the field, it's been great. There's a few things that they, especially the infielders with Xander and Rafi, that some things that they've done throughout their career, like long tossing every day, you know, every other day. And Rafi and Xander buying into the concept and getting better with this. You see it, right? You see Rafi's arm is playing a lot better. Xander's arm has gotten a lot better since the beginning of spring training. And you know, they've been great. There's no up and downs either, as far as like, you know, we win 9, we act the same way. We lose 2 or 3 in a row. We show up and we do work. And I'm very pleased with the way they've been doing. Also in the pitching side, you know, Adam has been amazing in the bullpen. Just the communication factor. I know he has helped Barnsey in a lot of stuff. And I think, you know, Haim and the group and the people that we talked to, trying to get these guys here and buy into the concept and come into the program, they did an amazing job.
Strong outing for Nathan Eovaldi last Saturday night. He gets the ball today against the Miami Marlins. And he hadn't been pitching poorly, but had been the victim of some bad luck. I talked with Nate about that and the rotation as a whole.
Nate, do you feel like the results have been indicative of how well you've been throwing over the last couple of outings, and it feel good to have, you know, those results tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it feels good having those results. You know, I feel like I've pitched a little bit better than what it's shown. I feel like I've had, you know, that one bad inning, you know, that's really affected me. But I mean, I got to find a way to go out there and go deeper into ball games. You know, I think the most frustrating thing for me. Because, you know, I want to go past the 5th inning, the 6th inning. I want to go deeper, 7th, 8th inning, and, you know, bridge that gap for the guys down in the pen and save the arms down there.
Just the rotation now as well, where it feels like, you know, each night you have a quality start. There's only been one start missed this year. Have you been a part of a group like this where things have been going as well as they have so far?
Yeah, I think anytime you look at a team that's doing well, it starts with the starting pitchers. You know, they're going 5 or, you know, they're going past the 5 inning mark. They're going 6, 7, and they're going giving you good quality outings. They're, you know, less than 2, 3 runs out there. And, you know, your team's got a good chance of winning the ball game, especially with our offense. I think it starts with the starting rotation and then goes on from there. A lot of the times I feel if you're kind of nibbling around the plate, walks, things like that, the defense kind of gets a little sluggish out there and kind of falls asleep, and it's, you know, it's not as easy for them to make the plays that we need them to make. And so I think it all starts again with the starting pitching. You're out there attacking the zone, having quick innings. Everybody's moving fast. They're staying on their toes, ready to go. And once they get in the dugout, you know, they're able to put up good at-bats as well. So
Eduardo Rodriguez has been struggling as of late. Another tough first inning against the Philadelphia Phillies, which allowed 4 runs, including a 3-run homer, doomed him in that Sunday contest against the Phillies. He was strong, though, in the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. I asked him about where his confidence is at.
Eddie, where's your confidence at right now? And do you feel like you've, you know, regained some of that confidence as you worked through, you know, the 2nd, 3rd, 4th inning and kind of built towards the end of the start?
I mean, my confidence is always high, man. I feel even if I feel good body wise, my mental is always high, you know. So I never think in the wrong way. You're always thinking to go out there and get 3 outs, no matter what the score is. If I give you 4 runs out there, my mental is just go out there and keep attacking. You know what I mean? Keep keeping the rain like it is, because I know we score a lot of runs. So I'm never thinking on something else. Oh, I'm gonna get more runs or something like that. No, I'm never thinking like that. Just go out there and keep pitching and keep getting out. You know.
Now to the Patriots, where OTA is taking place down in Foxborough, organized team activities ahead of mid-June's minicamp. Patriots head coach Bill Belichick met with the media, and I spoke with him on Thursday. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Good, Chris.
Wanted to ask you about some of the things that the players have been talking about, where they like the way the team looks on paper, but have talked about the significance of the work that you have to put in. At what sense in time do you get a sense for what the team is outside of what it is on paper as you go through your process?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, just take it one day at a time and try to, you know, do the things that we think will help the team the most. You know, we have a general outline and schedule, but, you know, that gets modified for a variety of reasons as we, you know, work through the process. And so that's what we'll continue to do. I don't have any time frame or expectations other than, you know, want to go out there and try to have a productive day today. We've talked about how we can do that. Hopefully we can get that done. And then we'll talk about, you know, our next opportunity and what we can try to do then, you know, both on an individual basis and collectively as a team or in groups, however it's broken down. And that's really how we try to, how I try to look at it and how we try to do it. So it's, you know, much more short-term focused than, you know, picking out some random date somewhere in the future that I don't really know what that means.
Here's Patriots wide receiver Jacoby Myers is looking to take another big step forward here in his third NFL season. And I asked him what Cam Newton was looking like in practice so far. Hey, Jacoby, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. You were talking before about eliminating mistakes and kind of getting to a better place mentally. How does a player go about doing that? Is it repetition? Is it, you know, these off-season workouts and kind of knowing exactly what you have a better handle on that? How do you get to that spot where you can limit mental mistakes?
I think every player is different, you know, and it's all about finding what's best for you. For me, it was just getting the reps in, honestly. Just being able to go over it, mess it up a couple times, so now I know what I did wrong and what I was thinking when I did it wrong, and then figuring out how to prevent that from happening again. So, but like I said, everybody definitely handles it differently. Like, some guys don't have to be here to study and learn and whatever they have to do to get it 100%. But I was one of those guys who had to show up and just come in here and just mess it up a couple times, so I knew exactly.
And there have been reports about how good Cam has looked throwing the football. You've worked out with him obviously a lot here in the offseason. Have there been changes you've noticed in how effective he is in throwing the football? Have you noticed anything?
My QB days fell short a couple of years ago, so I honestly couldn't even tell you. But I know he does look good right now. And like I said, all the guys definitely have been putting in a lot of work. And, you know, it's exciting to see what's coming forward.
And out of the Celtics, where thankfully a season that has been extremely frustrating appears to be coming to a close. Celtics have a lot of decisions to make in the offseason about how they wish to move forward. One of the positive signs this year has been Jason Tatum emerging towards superstardom. However, in this series, he has been treated poorly by the officials and also Kevin Durant. I talked with him about that.
Hey, Jason, how do you think you go about, you know, imposing your will against the opposition, kind of getting back to the previous question? What do you feel like you need to do in order to get the respect of the opposition and also, you know, the referees as well, since you start getting calls in those spots? How do you evolve in that sense?
You know, respect from the opposing team, you know, I clearly if you watch the games or watch, you know, past season or two, you know, you can obviously see when denying me the ball or, you know, doubling in a post or blitzing off ball screens, you know, that's a sign of respect. As far as from the officials, you know, it's something I'm still trying to figure out. You know, some days are better than others, but I don't know. You know, I think that's everybody likes to talk about when you get to that, I don't know, superstar status. You get those calls, and some I'm still trying to figure out.
All right, we'll wrap it up right there. Thanks, Jason.
Jason Tatum, right there. Not exactly what I was asking about. Certainly. Teams know how good Jason Tatum is, but you look at the way Kevin Durant has treated him in this series. It's not been a lot of respect from Durant to Jason Tatum in this series. For Press Pass, I'm Chris Ryan. of the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. A legendary performance from Jason Tatum last night gets the Celtics their first win of the series against the Brooklyn Nets as they defend home court, winning 125-119 over Brooklyn. Game number two will be tomorrow night, and that will be the first game in which the Celtics will play in front of close to a capacity crowd. Jason Tatum, a legendary performance. He dropped 50 on the Nets, shooting 16 of 30 from the field, 5-11 from three, and 13 of 15 from the free throw line. Tatum also had 7 assists and 6 rebounds. Also a monster game for Tristan Thompson, as he had 13 boards and 19 points. Marcus Smart, 23 points for the Celtics in this contest. So this was a interesting game for a number of reasons. I wanted to see what the Celtics' response was going to be. They fell behind early, like 19-4, and were able to come back and actually take the lead at the end of the first quarter of play. It was also the return of Kyrie Irving to the TD Garden in front of fans. We'll have more on that in a second, as he really was able to control the narrative and make it about the fans, making the remarks that he was hopeful that the Celtics fans would not engage in subtle racism, but keep it to basketball. More on that in a moment. So let's hear first from Tatum on his dropping 50 on the Nets.
It was just one of those nights. Tough shooting night, the first game, and obviously didn't get to play that much last game because I got poked in my eye. So, you know, trying to protect home court, trying to get a win at all costs. And, you know, sometimes, you know, nights like these are needed.
Here's Tristan Thompson, who had a monster game as well. I mentioned that earlier. 19 points, 13 rebounds for Tristan, including 9 on the offensive glass.
It was good, but I know I can't wait till Sunday. 17K green. I'm gonna see the leprechaun. I can't wait. That's what Boston's all about. That's what the playoffs are about. You know, we gotta, you know, they're gonna give us that life, that juice, that energy. You know, they haven't seen us all in this arena in a long time. So I know everyone's excited. And I can't wait. I'm super excited. Glad we got the win tonight.
It was Tristan Thompson right there. And Kyrie Irving is not one of my favorite people I've come across in covering pro sports. And what he was able to do after game two was control the narrative about his return. He was able to create an environment where the onus was put on the fans and putting the Celtics, their players, the organization on defense and talking about racism versus just being about him. And it was a smart play, and it was successful in that it allowed for the narrative to be about something other than him going into that game, and also created a environment where the Celtics players were talking about racism, whether fans were racist, and perhaps creating a rift between the players and the fans. It was a really interesting move by Kyrie, and one that I thought had a lot of success in the public discourse, but not really on the basketball court, because it ended up being, you know, Tristan Thompson talking about that he heard racist things from fans, Marcus Smart saying he heard some horrible things from fans, and a discussion about, you know, whether or not the Celtics fans, some of them were racist. And I thought that Jaylen Brown, as he usually does, and it's remarkable for, you know, an individual at the age of 25 that he has this much breadth and knowledge and ability to communicate. But I thought he summed it up perfectly in that it's always the time to have a conversation about systemic racism. But Kyrie making this a kind of a competitive thing in the playoffs was probably not the best thing. In that Kyrie had never brought this up before. Now he's coming back. He's playing in front of fans, and he's saying he doesn't want to hear racist things. And, you know, I thought that that was a really good point from Jaylen Brown, in that Kyrie was trying to use this for a competitive advantage as opposed to having a real honest dialogue and discourse about fan behavior, particularly in light of some of the things we've seen across the NBA. So Kyrie, once again, you know, was able to make this something that it didn't really need to be. He put the Celtics players, their organization, on defense, but the Celtics came out and got the win. Game four will have close to a packed house on Sunday. You can hear it on WKX on 139 and 1450 with pregame coverage at 6:30. Tip off a little after 7 p.m. Jeremy Lowe's on game time decision for the Boston Bruins. Their defenseman, one of the key members of this team on the back end, he went out in game one of the Capitals series and did not return. I talked with Lowe earlier this week. Hey, Lowe, how are you?
Good, you?
Good. Two, if I can. First, just Butchie was saying that he felt that there was a chance to be available for the start of the series. Do you feel like things are trending in that direction? You expect to be ready for game one?
Yeah, my goal is to be ready for as soon as possible. Obviously, every day I'm making good strides. And at the end, it's not going to be my call. But for sure, I'm feeling better and better every day.
And just your thoughts on playing the Islanders and how maybe the Washington series prepared you to play against the Islanders. Obviously, both teams, you have to take the hit to make the play. It's difficult to get inside on both of those teams. Do you think the Washington series was a good preparation for this one?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, the Islanders play a really physical game, a hard game to play against. You know, they're going to finish their check and they're going to work their every shift. I think it's gonna be a good test for us, and I think, like you said, Washington prepare us for that series.
More on the Bees, the Islanders, coming up in the next segment. We'll talk with Red Sox manager Alex Cora right now and get his thoughts on what it's been like managing during the course of the pandemic. Of course, we are turning the page as a society, welcoming fans back, bringing protocols to a much lower level in doing so as well. I talked with Alex Cora, Red Sox manager, about that, as the Red Sox will have full capacity, the option for full capacity, for games today and tomorrow and moving forward at Fenway Park. Alex, how would you define what it's been like to manage during the pandemic? And obviously, a lot of society looks to baseball with obviously Fenway open up to near 100% capacity this weekend. What has that been like? And what will you tell your kids, grandkids down the road about, this experience?
Well, Chris, with me, probably it's a little different than others, right? Because I wasn't around last year. So I had to live throughout the pandemic as a normal human being, right? And back home, it was a challenge as far as like the lockdown, the curfew. And, I still remember the first day I went to the grocery store. It was gloves, mask, hoodie, get the groceries, come home, everybody in one room. I go straight to the shower. It was surreal, right? And then wash the groceries, all that. I still remember that one. So for me, this is nothing. This is just normal life. And this is where we at as a society, right? That I have to wear a mask every time. Yeah, it is what it is. As far as what we bring for the city and what's going to happen tomorrow, it's great, right? It feels like we're moving forward as a society. There's a lot of information out there that we didn't have on March 17th last year. And we live in a, we were panicking, right? You were panicking. Everybody was panicking. What are we going to do? But now it feels like it's as normal as possible, obviously with some rules or guidelines or stuff that we have to do. But as far as differences, it's just, communication has been great. The preparation has been awesome. There's a few things that we have to keep doing to stay healthy, right? But besides that, it's business as usual. I don't think it's any different than what you guys are going through in your job. So, I'm not complaining. I think this group has been amazing, has been pretty solid, and hopefully we can keep doing it this way.
Ron said last year that about 50% of his time was devoted to COVID-related things. I assume it's nowhere close to that for you in this environment.
There's certain days that I just go I don't want to hear it, I don't want to hear it. But most of the time, we do a good job communicating in mornings and going over stuff. There's a few things right now that probably MLB and the Players Association are going over, you know, with everything that is going on around us. But at the end, we have a great staff. They do an outstanding job. I think Nick and Taylor, you know, what they do on a daily basis for the group here is amazing. You know, sometimes I feel bad for them because these guys are supposed to be treating players and helping players out, and they are given masks and talking about COVID the whole time. And I'm very proud of them. The two of them, they have been amazing of what they do and keeping us informed and not only helping us here, but also our families. You know, when you talk to family members and the people around us, and, you know, the testing has been amazing. You know, the communication has been great. It's a testament where we at as an organization and the people that work for us, and for how hard our job is, right, to manage a big league team and coach players and all that. They have a harder job, and they've been amazing for us.
Thanks.
Alex, do you have a weather report for tonight?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's going to be – it's going to be a grind today. It's going to be a grind tonight. Yeah.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora right there. This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. More on the Celtics and Bruins next. All right, more on the Celtics and Nets now. Brooklyn still leading that series 2-1, but the Celtics a chance to even things up at TD Garden on Sunday at 7 p.m. To me, for the Celtics to get to this point, a huge game for them was Game 1. I thought the Celtics needed to see that without Jaylen Brown, they could play with a Nets team that had beaten them each time this year. And that game showed them that they could. The juggernaut of James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant had not really played much this year, only a handful of times. And there's not a lot of feel as to what that was going to be like. You know, you have three of the best scorers the game has seen playing together on the same team. And that was going to be a challenge in itself. And the Celtics were playing without Jaylen Brown. And it was a wonder as to whether the Celtics could compete in this series from the outside. I thought maybe from the inside as well. And I talked with Marcus Smart about that.
Hey, Marcus, in some ways, did you guys need to see, you know, the evidence tonight that you could, you know, if you played the way you wanted the defensive end, play with this group? And did you guys need to see that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's the playoffs, man. You know, you're not going to bring it. You might as well stay at home. You know, and all you can do is control what you can control. You go out there, the coaches, staff put up a scheme. You go out there and you try to run it to the best you can. And, you know, we did pretty good. Obviously, you know, we had a couple breaks down. We'll see in film tomorrow. We'll fix it, see what we have to do, and come out and try to execute again.
Here's Rob Williams.
Hey, Rob, just an upshot on how you guys defended overall tonight. And did you feel that this was a game, given how you defended, that you needed to win? Or does this kind of provide a blueprint for how you can have success in this series?
Yeah, I feel like we play I feel like we played solid defense tonight. I feel like obviously we could have played, you know, a lot better defense. And you know what I'm saying? You got to play these guys multiple times. You know, they pick up on stuff as well as we pick up on stuff. So sometimes you got to adjust.
And also Jason Tatum.
Hey, Jason, just your upshot on game one. Do you feel like this is one that slipped away that you could have stolen given how well you defended against them? Or is this kind of a blueprint for how you can have success in the series?
I mean, yeah, we're going to watch film. Obviously, we played really well in the first half. Certainly, some things we're going to have to change going forward. So, you know, we're going to watch film tomorrow. Come back for the next game.
So we know now that the Celtics can compete. The Celtics can compete in this series. We're still a ways away from knowing if they can win this series. We will have that further solidified, the competitive aspect, if they can win game four Sunday night. Then you obviously got to win one game on the opposing team's floor. to win this series. So Celtics be back in it and would be competitive in this series if they can win, but they still have another big step to make if, in fact, they can are going to win this series. I'll switch back to the Bruins now as they take on the New York Islanders tonight, game one of their second-round series against the Isles. And Brad Marchand pumped because there's going to be a full house in attendance for game one inside the TD Garden.
Yeah, we're excited. You know, we've been a little envious watching the other games and seeing how many people have been in the arenas and really been looking forward to that. So I can't wait to, you know, to see that and how loud it's going to be, how excited fans are going to be. And definitely going to have a huge adrenaline rush off of that. And I mean, that's such a big part of playoffs is having the atmosphere in the arenas and how hard it is when you go into certain buildings. And definitely missed that in the first round. So really looking forward to that this round.
Hey, Marshy, how are you?
Good, bud. How are you?
Good. In looking at this series, it seems like the Islanders have tremendous depth, good system, good on the back end in net. You guys may have an edge up front in terms of top-end talent. Do you see it that way? And how good do your best players have to be to have, you know, success in this series?
Everyone has to be good. You know, I think that's how you go deep in playoffs is you have different guys step up every night. You know, everyone needs to be on the top of their game and play a hard two-way game. But then different guys step up all the way through playoffs. I mean, you see that last night in Vegas, you know, Janmark getting a hat trick. That's the way that you win. You win with your depth. Very rarely do you win with one line or a couple of guys. You know, it's because of the depth of the group. And they have that. We have that, which is what's going to make it a tough series is that, you know, we're both going to rely on four lines and all of our D and goalies to keep us in it and to win games. And it's going to make it very competitive. So, yeah, we have to be good, but everyone on both teams has to be good, and they will be. And that's why, you know, everyone's excited for every single playoff game and amped up, and they're going to play through any kind of injury or sickness. So that's what makes playoffs so exciting is it's so hard to win each night, and you know, that's why it's rewarding.
Here's Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy on some of the similarities and differences between the Isles and Bees.
Well, I mean, obviously, I love our top two lines right now, the way they're going offensively, but they've scored goals as well. So I'm sure they'll say the same about their guys. They've moved Komarov up there, which is a little different flavor, probably what Barzell's used to, probably more of a defensive-minded or forecheck type of guy to help in certain situations. They know their team better than I do. But at the end of the day, I know we didn't give up much against Washington 5-on-5. That was our objective. We took too many penalties, so we gave them some life in the power play. We were able to kill them, which is great. So, you know, I think New York probably gave Pittsburgh more chances they would like. So I would expect to tidy that up with our group of forwards as well. They're not going to want to, you know, allow that many chances. Their goaltender came through for them. So we expect the same from our guy. So, no, there's not a ton. Like I said, there's certain things our team does attack a little more, and it also leads to some turnovers in the neutral zone. Our numbers are high there where we can be better managing pucks. They're a little more straightforward in that regard. They'll stretch you out to get some chances, get them behind your forecheck. But if not, it's going behind our D. So, no, nothing's really changed what we saw earlier in the year. Don't expect them to change the way they play. They've been successful at it. We're not going to change right now until we have to. So, again, I think it's going to be a lot of similarities to what we talked about earlier.
Evan DuPont.
Our Bruce Cassidy right there. Bruins and Islanders play game one on Saturday. Game two at 7:30 p.m. inside the TD Garden, and that will be played on Memorial Day. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks so much for joining us for the Press Pass.